Hello everyone, and welcome to an episode of Everyday Black History. Good evening to everyone out there on this Monday, and hopefully you had a good Monday, a good start to your week. And as we approach the end of the month of August, it's just hard to believe how quickly this summer went by, and the fact that we're in the end of August. Of course, the summer season officially ends in mid-September, but just the fact that it's August 24th already, you know, the summer flew by. It's like, it seems like just yesterday was 4th of July, and now we're looking at Labor Day coming up really soon. But hopefully, as mentioned, it was a good start to your week, and a happy Monday to all of you out there. And now we're just going to get into some Black history as we do here on Everyday Black History. And today we're going to be highlighting three men. And then it'll be highlighting three men who were freedom fighters who fought with other abolitionists against slavery during the 1800s. And they all lost their lives in this fight. But they fought for freedom, and not just for themselves, but for other fellow slaves. And the surprising thing is that two of these men were born free. And, you know, were educated men, college educated, and thrived in communities of fellow abolitionists. And but yet they still, despite, you know, a life of, you know, of freedom, they still saw what their brothers and sisters were dealing with who were born into slavery. And one of the men was born into slavery, but escaped slavery and fought, you know, alongside both white and black men for freedom. Now we're going to highlight, you know, three men today, but there were five black men who contributed to this raid on Harper's Ferry. Now, Harper's Ferry the Harper's Ferry raid was a raid that was ran by a man by the name of John Brown, who was a white abolitionist. And John Brown believed in armed rebellion against slavery. And he got together 16 white men who were abolitionists and 5 black men, and they all participated on this raid at Harper's Ferry. Now, the raid was unsuccessful. Many of the men either died during this raid or were captured and died later. Were captured and tried and hanged due to the crimes. There were a few who escaped alive, but we celebrate these men because of the fact that they gave up, you know, what could have been a privileged and easy life, and they fought for freedom. They fought with slaves or former slaves and freedmen for freedom. And so three out of the five black men we're going to highlight today, and on the next episode, we'll highlight two of the other men who fought in this failed raid at Harper's Ferry. So the first man we're going to highlight is a man by the name of Shields Green. He was also known as Emperor. They called him Shields Emperor Green. And as mentioned, he was an ex-slave. He fought and participated in John Brown's raid on Harper's Island. And it was said that he even had a chance to escape capture, but that he returned to fighting and was captured with his fellow, men in arms. Now, he was born in 1836 in South Carolina, Charleston, South Carolina. And Charleston was a well-known slave port during the slave times. So he was born in Charleston, South Carolina. And he escaped slavery only 1 year before the event at Harper's Ferry. So he didn't get a chance to enjoy freedom long. But, you know, he escaped from Charleston and he made his way to freedom in Rochester, New York. And while on his way to Rochester, New York, he met up with Frederick Douglass. And through Frederick Douglass, he met John Brown. Now, he accompanied Frederick Douglass to Chambersburg, Pennsylvania, where he met with John Brown and some of the other abolitionists that John Brown recruited to participate in this raid at Harper's Ferry. And even though John Brown didn't agree with an armed attack on a federal arsenal, he still connected Shields Green, with John Brown, and even though Frederick Douglass left, he didn't participate. Obviously, Green stayed to join the Raiders. And even though he, was a slave, so he didn't have much education, he was known as to be a man of few words, but he was courage. He had courage, and he had self-respect, which made him dignified in the eyes of the fellow raiders. And during the raid, Shields Green and others were assigned to recruit fellow slaves to join in on the fighting. And so he recruited two other men, two other black men who participated in this raid, Dangerfield Newby and O.P. Anderson. Dangerfield Newby died in the raid, and O.P. Anderson was one of the few men who actually made it out alive. But Jeremiah Anderson, who was one of the also one of the men who escaped captured, said that Shields could have escaped with him. We mentioned earlier how Shields Green had the opportunity to escape capture. And Jeremiah Anderson said that, he could have left with him, but he decided to go back and fight with John Brown and the rest of the men, even if that meant, getting captured or even dying, because, death was better than being a slave. So he went back and he continued to fight, and he was captured. And he was indicted, tried, and convicted for treason, along with John Brown and many of the other men who participated in this raid. They were convicted of treason against the state of Virginia, as well as many other crimes. And it was said that Shields Green didn't say a word during his trial. John Brown was executed first, but before he was executed, Shields Green was able to send word to him and tell him how glad he was to have fought with him and is awaiting his execution willingly. And he was hanged 2 weeks after Brown. And him, as well as one of the other men who we're going to highlight today, were hanged together 2 weeks after Brown. Now, the interesting thing was that after the execution, the cadavers of Shields Green, as well as John Copeland, who we're going to cover next, they were exhumed and taken to Virginia to the Winchester Medical College for dissection by students in the anatomy laboratory. Now, during that time, if you were tried as a criminal, your body was used for medical colleges for as a cadaver for them to dissect it and to learn, for medical and surgery and things like that. So his body was exhumed, and as well as John Copeland's, and one of the men who was John Copeland, his family sent word to try and retrieve the body, and it was a man who went down there to try and retrieve the bodies, but he had no luck. He found Shields Green's body, but he wasn't there for Shields Green. He was only there for John Copeland. So he left Shields Green's body there, and they used it for dissection in his medical school. Now, the Winchester Medical College, was soon burned down during the Civil War. And it was said that the reason why that school was burned down was because of things like that. The fact that they took Shields Green and John Copeland's body, exhumed it. They actually exhumed it from the ground. So these men was already buried, and they went and exhumed it from the ground and used it to teach medical students. So it was said, I don't know how true it is, that the school was burned down during the Civil War as retaliation for these as well as other acts. So, Shields Green, as we mentioned, died at the age of 23, but he was a freedom fighter because he was willing to fight and die for the freedom of himself as well as his people. So Shields Green, we salute you. Now, the next person we're going to be looking up is a man by the name who we mentioned before, John Copeland. And John Copeland Anthony Copeland Jr. was born a free black man in Raleigh, North Carolina. And he was born in 1834. He was born in Raleigh, North Carolina, but his family moved to Oberlin, Ohio, when he was a young man. He became involved in abolitionist and anti-slavery activities, and he participated in several freedom-fighting endeavors, aside from the Harper's Ferry raid. He also participated in the Oberlin-Wellington rescue, which we'll get into in a little bit. But now, his parents, he was born in 1834, and his parents, John Anthony Copeland Sr., he was born into slavery in 1808 in North Carolina, and his mom, Delilah Evans, was born as a free black woman in 1809. Now, his dad, John Copeland Sr., was emancipated in 1815 when he was a boy, and he married his wife, Delilah Evans, and they moved to first Hillsboro, North Carolina in 1843, and then to escape racial persecution, they fled to Cincinnati, Ohio, and then to Oberlin. And a lot of his family settled there as well, because Oberlin, Ohio, was a town where, you know, slaves were free in Ohio. You know? And so a lot of slaves, you know, that escaped slavery would go to Ohio. And Oberlin had a high, there was a lot of anti-slavery and abolitionists there. So Ohio was a place that was like a safe haven for former slaves or runaway slaves. Now, John Anthony Copeland Jr. became a carpenter, and he actually attended Oberlin College as well. And it was said that he was highly literate and very self-expressive. And he was known to be a smart man. And he became involved in the Oberlin Anti-Slavery Society. And together with some of his uncles, he was one of 37 men involved in the incident known as the Oberlin-Wellington Rescue. And that was to free John Price, who was a runaway slave who had been captured and held by authorities under the Fugitive Slave Act of 1850. And so the men freed him. They freed John Price, the slave, and helped him to escape to Canada. And there were only two men who were tried for their part. They had negotiated a deal between state and federal officials, and there were only two men who were tried for their part in that Oberlin and Wellington rescue. One of them was Charles Henry Langston, who they received light sentences, though, because Charles Henry Langston was very eloquent, and he was able to defend himself as well as the other brother who was caught up in this mess so eloquently. And Charles Henry Langston is the grandfather of Langston Hughes. So that's where the Charles Henry Langston, Langston Hughes, you know, they have that connection. So Langston Hughes always had abolitionist, you know, freedom fighter blood in him. And he came from eloquent people. So that's why we know him to be, you know, leader of the Harlem Renaissance and an eloquent man. But John Copeland, he was recruited in 1859 by John Brown's armed group, by his uncle, and by another fellow raider by the name of Lewis Sheridan Leary, who we'll talk about next. And John Brown led 21 followers, 16 white, 5 black men, and they captured the armory guards of Harper's Ferry, which was part of Virginia at the time, and they took control of the federal arsenal. But they were soon pinned down by Virginia militiamen and Robert E. Lee, who was a well-known general during the Civil War, and some U.S. Marines came and apprehended the men during this Harper's Ferry raid. And John Copeland's role was to seize control of the rifle works, where the rifles and the long guns were. Him, along with another man by the name of John Henry Kagi, they were tasked with this. But John Henry Kagi and several others were killed while trying to escape by swimming across a river. But John Copeland was captured alive and taken in the middle of the river. And he, along with Shields Brown and John Brown, or Shields Green, I keep calling him Shields Brown, Shields Green and John Brown, and five others were held for trial by the state of Virginia, and he was found guilty of murder and conspiracy to incite slaves to rebellion, and he was sentenced to death by hanging. But some of the letters that he wrote home to his family during this time in the 1800s just showed how expressive he was and how eloquent he was. One letter he wrote to his family to make meaning of his sacrifice, this is 6 days before his execution, he wrote to his brother referring to the American Revolution. He says to him, and I quote, "And now, brother, for having lent my aid to a general no less brave than George Washington and engaged in a cause no less honorable and glorious, I am to suffer death. Washington entered the field to fight for the freedom of the American people, not for the white man alone, but for both black and white. Nor were they white men alone who fought for the freedom of this country. The blood of black men flowed as freely as the blood of white men. Yes, the very first blood that was spilt was that of a Negro. But this you know as well as I do, the claims which we as colored men have on the American people." So just, you know, that was a little clip of a letter that he wrote to his brother about his willingness to participate in this raid, you know, and die for freedom. You know, these men were willing to die for freedom for themselves, even though they were born free. Even the prosecutor, the prosecuting attorney, when speaking of Copeland, he said, From my dealings with him, I regarded him as one of the most respectable prisoners we had. He was a copper-colored Negro, behaved himself with such a firmness, with as much firmness as any of them, and with more dignity. If it had been possible to recommend a pardon for any of them, it would have been for this man Copeland, as I regretted as much, if not more, as seeing him executed than any other one from the party. So even, you know, the prosecuting attorney regretted having to see him executed because he was a very intelligent and as we mentioned, so a very expressive man in which he was able to get that kind of sympathy from him. Now, he was executed in Charlestown, West Virginia, which at the time was just all Virginia, on December 16th, 1859. And on his way to the gallows, he said, "If I'm dying for freedom, I could not die for a better cause. I'd rather die than be a slave." And as we mentioned, his parents appealed to Governor Henry Weiss of Virginia to claim their son's body, but he refused. And after his execution, as we mentioned before, his body was exhumed by medical students who dug his and Shields Green body up, and they took him to Winchester Medical College Anatomy Laboratory for training dissection. So, his body was never found. You know, Shields Green was found, but his body was never found. And they even exhumed the bodies of John Brown's son, Watson Brown, as well, for the same thing, to use it as a teaching cadaver. But his body was reinterred right alongside his father's in New York State at about 1861. So, John Copeland, Anthony Copeland, we salute you as well. Now, the final person we're going to cover today that was also involved in a Harper's Ferry raid was Lewis Sheridan Leary. And Lewis Sheridan Leary, born 1835, was a freeborn African-American harness maker. His father was a harness maker as well, and he was born in Fayetteville, North Carolina. Now, the interesting thing about his ancestry is that his paternal grandparents were Irish, were an Irishman, Jeremiah O'Leary, who fought in the American Revolution. And his mom was of African, European, and Native American descent. His great-grandfather, Aaron Revels, was also who also fought in the American Revolutionary War. And through Aaron Revels, he was a cousin to Hiram Rhodes Revels, who was the first African-American to serve in the United States Senate. His brother was also a North Carolina politician and lawyer, John S. Leary. So, you know, he came from a family of freedom fighters, you know, as well as educated people and politicians. Now, as mentioned, he was born in 1835, and by 1857, he moved to Oberlin, Ohio, where he met Mary Peterson, who was a graduate of Oberlin College. She was a Black American graduate of Oberlin College, and Louis Leary became involved with abolitionists in Oberlin, because as we mentioned, Oberlin, Ohio was a thriving community of abolitionists and anti-slavery activities. So he met John Brown in Cleveland, Ohio. In 1858, he as well participated in the Oberlin Wellington Rescue with John Anthony Copeland. And, you know, he wasn't arrested in that, you know, because I mentioned only two men was arrested, Charles Henry Langston and Simon Bushnell, but they only received light sentences for that. But he was one of the first Black recruits from Oberlin to join John Brown's army and during the Harper's Ferry raid. And he left his wife and his 6-month daughter at home. And he accompanied Copeland and to Chambersburg, Pennsylvania to join Brown in this fight. Now, he was injured during the Harper's Ferry raid. He was mortally wounded, and he survived terrible wounds during this raid. And it says that he died 8 days from the 8 days after the attack from the wounds that he suffered during the Harper's Ferry raid. And as we know, John Brown and Copeland and five other men were captured, tried, and hanged for their participation in this raid. But after Leary's death, you know, from his injuries, his family was helped by another abolitionist, James Redpath and Wendell Phillips, who helped raise money for Leary's wife and his daughter to help support them and for their education. Now, his widow, Mary Peterson Leary, married again. She got married to Charles Henry Langston 10 years after the death of Louis Leary. And they moved to Lawrence, Kansas, where they remained for the rest of their lives. And in 1872, Charles and Mary's daughter, Carolyn Mercer Langston, was born, who was the mother of Langston Hughes. We gotta mention that connection, because Langston Hughes is so big in Black culture. And just knowing where his ancestry comes from, it's actually a pretty big deal. But when Louis Leary, when he was injured in a raid and he suffered these terrible wounds, his wife didn't even know that he was involved in these abolitionist activities. He didn't tell her anything about the raid. Well, she knew about his abolitionist activities, but she didn't know anything about the raid. He didn't mention it to her. And he was reported as saying that he was ready to die. You know, as mentioned, these are men who, you know, was ready to fight and die for freedom. And him and Copeland were born free. And they went to college, so they had education. But yet they still was willing to fight and die for freedom for themselves and for their people. And there was a memorial service that was held for Louis Leary, John Copeland, and Shields Green on December 25th, 1859. And there was actually a monument that was erected in Westwood Cemetery at Oberlin to honor the three of them. In 1865, after the Civil War, the monument was moved in 1977 to the Martin Luther King Jr. Park. Many years later, and it's a monument to the three: Shields Green, John Anthony Copeland, and Louis Sheridan Leary. And all of these men died. Shields Green was 23. John Copeland was 25. And Louis Leary was 24. So they all died young men. But we honor their sacrifice, you know, because even though their raid was unsuccessful, you know, their example proved, you know, their example are the examples that inspired men generations later, like Martin Luther King and other, you know, other people who participated in the civil rights movement, you know, 100 years later. You know, so we, you know, pay homage to these men because of their sacrifices and that they were willing to die for freedom, for themselves and for others. As mentioned, there were two other black men who were involved in these raids that we're going to highlight, you know, on another day. Dangerfield Newby and O.P. Anderson. They were both men who participated in the raid as well. But we just wanted to highlight these three in particular, because they were the first ones who were part of this, and they were the ones who were responsible for recruiting others, white and black, as well as John Brown, to participate in this to fight for freedom. So Shields Green, John Anthony Copeland, Lewis Sheridan, Leary, we honor you all and salute you for your sacrifice and for your contribution to black history and black culture. Now that concludes this episode of Everyday Black History. As mentioned, hopefully you all enjoyed the episode, and hopefully you all enjoy the rest of your week, and it won't be too much of a crazy week. And we'll be coming at you with more black history very soon. And so just stay tuned for the next episode.